Okay, you're listening to the Burst podcast about mental health at Bournemouth University. My name is Jo Tyler. I actually work here, which is very unusual for me to be this side of the microphone. I haven't done this for many years. I'm doing it for very good reason, because in the studio with me, I have three very important people who are going to talk to us about mental health, but also about their experience of mental health in relation to what you might be going through when you first go through the doors at Bournemouth University. So I'm going to get the three gentlemen in front of me to introduce them. Starting with the most qualified, I think, in the room.
Yeah, Dr. Andrew Mayers here. Yes, indeed, I'm a principal academic here at Bournemouth University, where I do teach clinical psychology. But beyond that, a locally and nationally known mental health campaigner, also patron for Dorset Mind and Bournemouth Samaritans, but very passionate about young people's mental health, particularly those students who are joining us at the university, to make sure that they are kept well, and identifying those things that tend to emerge when they first come to university.
And I'm particularly excited to welcome two gentlemen to the university who are here in the summer. And when you're listening to this, it might not be quite as sunny as it is in lovely Bournemouth today in May. But could you introduce yourself?
So I'm Johnny Benjamin, and I'm a mental health campaigner. I've got my own lived experience of mental health issues. And now, campaign and write and speak publicly about my experiences to try and help other people.
And next to you?
So my name's Neil Laybourne. I'm also a mental health awareness campaigner. I'm an ambassador for the charity Rethink Mental Illness. Together with Johnny, we go and speak to businesses and schools and universities and lots of different organisations about our story and raising awareness in mental health and getting involved in charity campaigns to do with raising awareness.
Now, people who aren't aware of Johnny and Neil's relationship, if you've not seen the Channel 4 documentary Stranger on a Bridge, which is about your experience pertinently, and how far you've come since then I totally recommend you go and do that.
Thank you.
Will be on Bob at BEU. You can go and have a look at bobnational.net and watch Stranger on a Bridge in your own time. But maybe you could explain very briefly how you guys not just met, but why you then continued to stay in the same sort of space and wanted to campaign.
So I was 20, I was 20 years old. I was at university at the time, and I was in my third year. I had a massive breakdown. I was psychotic. I was really unwell. I was put into a hospital, and I was given my diagnosis, which is schizoaffective disorder, which is like schizophrenia and bipolar. And for me, that was it. My life was over, I believed. And so I ran away from the hospital and I went to this bridge, and that's where I met Neil. I mean, the exchange that we had on the bridge changed everything for me. His kindness and his compassion and his empathy, it just changed everything for me. And eventually he managed to get me to step off the edge of the bridge, and I was taken away by the police and sectioned. And that was really the start of my recovery, I think. You know, it took years to get back on track, but when I finally did, that's when I launched actually a campaign to find the stranger on the bridge. And the campaign was really amazing. It was really big, and amazingly, he came forward 2 weeks later.
I mean, obviously, you talk about people from university going through that experience and feeling like you've been detached or in some way, you know, are unwell. What were you, not to put you in a horrible space now, but what were your feelings when you were, a lot of my students talk to me about wanting to run away, wanting to hide from something, and feeling that they can't manage. Was that how you felt at the time?
Yeah, I'd had things going on before I came to university. You know, I was hearing a voice. I've been depressed before coming to university. But things really kind of escalated when I went to university. I lived in London. I went to Manchester University. So I was away from home. And it was just a completely different world for me. I was first time being independent and having to look after money and things like drinking. I'd never really kind of drunk that much before. And now suddenly I was drinking lots and I found it really difficult. I've always found socializing very difficult. And for me, university was a lot about socializing, and I really struggled with that. But I wouldn't talk about what was going on in my head. I was really getting bad. I started to self-harm, and alcohol became a problem for me. But I was just determined not to let anyone see it, because I was embarrassed. I was really embarrassed. And, you know, I thought I thought to myself, everyone else is having the time of their lives. You know, I can't be seen to be struggling. I thought back then it was a weakness. But things just, they really did spiral out of control. And I wish, looking back, I would have, you know, spoken to someone really. Because when everyone did find out, because I had a breakdown in my third year, you know, everyone did find out, everyone was really supportive. So I wish I would have kind of spoken up earlier, but I was just too embarrassed.
I mean, I'm looking here at Andrew, you know, and these are not words that you're unfamiliar with, are they?
No, very familiar indeed. And one of the reasons I'm so passionate about young people's mental health, one thing that we know is that the typical diagnoses are emerging round about sort of 15 through to 19. And it's not uncommon for the likes of schizoaffective disorder to be diagnosed at the age that Johnny first experienced that. The likelihood of that emerging is triggered by certain events, and coming to university can be one of those, certainly the change in lifestyle. And one of the things I remember when, and I've known Johnny now for about 2.5 years or so, and when I first met him back here at the university back in October 2014, one of the things he said to me was, I just wish that we'd learnt this at school about mental health and all of that. And one of my passions is to take mental health education into school so that young people can learn about the diagnosis and also learn about how they can be more empathic, but also about how they can engage with each other, to look out for your friends, and to also have that support network in place in school so that when they get to university, it's not completely foreign to them. And that could help.
You know, I think the point that you've made there and about empathy is you're saying that you felt that you were in some way weak or useless. These are words that I hear quite a lot when students come to see me in tutorial. Neil, I'm going to bring you into the conversation. Did you go to university?
No, I didn't actually. After GCSEs, I started doing A-levels, history, English and media studies, and I got really behind in my first term, and so I actually thought I was too behind to carry on. I did actually want to go to do A-levels and then possibly, but no, so I started working from the age of 16. I started working full time.
Okay, I mean, this is interesting because we find students come here with a lack of life experience or our understanding, and that's not just about not doing your laundry, people. Mm-hmm. It's literally about managing money. It's literally about being away from home physically. Do you think that being 16 and going straight into the workplace maybe gave you a better grounding to deal with your own mental health and your own well-being?
Certainly, I'm really grateful for like the journey that I went through, which a lot of my friends did go the university route and some did do the working route. And I think it helped me with building some resilience, actually. You know, I've always said that even though I campaign for, you know, being awareness around mental health, you know, as a typical guy, you know, I've always tended to kind of not be as open as I could be. And I think that's to do with this kind of notion that we should just be resilient and should just kind of get on with things. And I experienced that a lot in the workplace. You know, you weren't really encouraged to kind of really open up or disclose anything that wasn't really work related. You know, it was just seen as kind of, you know, getting in the way. And so any time that, you know, as any prolonged absence from work or anything, it was always very much just managed and contained. You know, you talked about your productivity and your mental health was never addressed. So you always felt like it was a burden to bring it up. I'm really grateful, I think, for the early experience that I had being exposed to making difficult decisions, having difficult conversations and trying to kind of forge and fight your way ahead in this kind of like this work environment, which, you know, some people get exposed to it, you know, when they're, you know, in their mid-20s for the first time. And that can be a very challenging time, the whole transition as well. So having that already, you know, by the time I'd met Johnny, I was 24. And I'd already worked in retail, in construction, and I'd just started a new career in fitness, being a personal trainer. So I kind of had to, you know, I'd gone on a few different mental journeys myself, I felt in a very good place, actually, very good place to be for the first time working in London, completely away from where I grew up. And felt quite self-assured and resilient. And I think a good degree of that was having, you know, had that that sort of 6 or 8 years of working behind me.
And I think that's, I mean, that's really what Andrew and I are going to be trying to do at the university, which is make people feel they can talk, but also provide some sort of a toolkit, really, because there's lots of help here. But getting young people, or getting people who first come to university, including mature students, you know, at the moment we're talking to people who are in their 40s who want to come to university, but they feel the stigma of being with a lot of young people who they think have their life sorted in some way, or having the time of their lives. I'm hearing this rather a lot at the moment, you know. Everyone else is having a wonderful time, but it's not necessarily the truth. And you picked up on that fantastic point, which is, I mean, obviously I'm a woman and I've got three guys here and you are all talking, which is wonderful, but it's not the case usually.
No, it's not. And another one of the things that I'm very passionate about is getting men to talk. We have to do it in different ways. Certainly the work that I do with fathers, with postnatal depression, and that sort of thing is maybe different forums, and maybe have meetings in pubs. It might seem a little odd, but that's a good place to have these conversations, rather than perhaps a children's centre where the mothers or women might talk. But I also think the point you made earlier as well about the workplace and the different experiences, and of course we have students who go on placement here at the university, and one of the things I've noticed about the third years who have been on placement and those who have not, there's a big difference in the way in which they are seeing life. And I think one of the things we need to look at is giving our students a little bit more of a real world experience at the same time to kind of prepare them for that, but certainly opening up that conversation as well.
I totally agree with you. I've been here for 10 years and I actually left home when I was 16. I ran away from home and I went to London, and sort of like you, overcame a lot of those kind of very adult things that are thrust in your face. But it left me with a lot of insecurity. I always felt in some way that I was different, and I could never put my finger on why I felt like that. And I think a lot of that was because I had mental health issues and my self-esteem was very, very low. So hopefully my students will, I'm very honest with them about it. As I say to Andrew, I'm an outie, as we put it at the meeting, I'm an outie, which made everyone laugh. But it's true. I think if we're not worried about talking about it in a constructive way, you know, not just a, oh, you're feeling a bit mad today way, but a feeling of empathy, which kind of brings me back to that point on the bridge where you've got two young men who obviously have very little in common on the surface, but have found a point of empathy, which is what we're looking for at the university. So, Neil, to ask you, you know, you're seeing somebody on the bridge who's clearly in trouble. What was your first response? And if you do see somebody who's in that situation, what can we do to help or support them?
Yeah, my the response was just to check in. I didn't know if I was walking over to talk somebody out of jumping. I just genuinely wanted to know why they were sitting on the bridge. And then within seconds, he told me that he was going to take his life, you know. So, yeah, the kind of what I thought he was sitting there became true. But I didn't go over with an intention of talking him down. The first was just check in. Why, you know, why are you there? Are you okay? And then within the first couple of minutes, I just felt this kind of wave of empathy that, you know, somebody that needed like so much help. You know, he was explaining everything to me and telling me what was going on in his head, and actually I had no idea how to react to this, like what to do and what to say. And I was really thrown because it was the first time that I'd ever experienced that. Nobody had ever opened up to me like that, you know, my whole life. And so it was a very difficult situation to try and handle. But the reason as to walking over was simply just because if you think, you know, somebody may need help, you know, just ask the question. And if he'd have said, no, I'm fine, and you know, I'm just, you know, I'm just taking the view, maybe I would have questioned him a little bit. But yeah, I felt this connection as well straight away. When we started talking, I don't know if it's to do with the fact that we're both guys or we were both quite similar ages. I was only 4 years older. I just felt like a kind of this sense of trust that he was allowing me to have. And it just felt like I didn't feel like I was making the situation worse, you know. So I just kept slowly just nudging questions. It's a two-way thing. You know, we all have to listen. But if somebody's, you know, wanting to open up as well, they have to allow themselves to open up. And Johnny did that, and I think that took a lot of courage. Rather than getting anxious and you know, upset, he actually allowed himself to have this conversation with me. You know, so it wasn't me helping him, it was us together finding a solution in that conversation.
I think that's an amazing thing. And Johnny, I'm watching your face at the moment because we're in a podcast. You're clearly, you know, you possibly have to relive this in your head, don't you? Rather a lot, in a way that might not be very comfortable. But do you have something positive that you draw from the empathy and connection that you've made with Neil?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I can talk to Neil about anything, really. You know, I still get very difficult, intrusive thoughts, and some things are quite embarrassing to say. And you know, but with Neil, I feel like I can tell him anything. I mean, I had a relapse a few months ago, in February of this year, and I became psychotic again. And Neil was the one that, you know, he was there, and I was very sort of open and honest with him, and because I know that, you know, I will be met with a very compassionate, very empathetic reaction always. There's nothing I can say really that will shock him or make him kind of turn away, or, you know, and that's really important, I think, to have. It's really important. I can't do that with everyone, you know, because you worry. Well, I worry what people are going to think and if I'll be judged and, you know, what people's reactions are going to be. But And there are people out there, you know, the Samaritans, for example. I've used them a number of times, and you'll always, always be met with someone that is empathetic and understanding. And doesn't, that's another thing, like, it's patient, because it is hard. It is really hard to open up, I think, and talk, particularly for the first time. It's, you know, there's so many things going on in your head, and it's hard to find the words, and it's hard to actually speak them. So you need someone that's patient and not going to rush, and that's what Neil was and is, really, and that's so important for me.
And clearly, Andrew, good advice as well.
I think so.
Feels like,
and I think it's rather an appropriate moment that Johnny mentioned the Samaritans then, because Neil is often referred to as the Good Samaritan who crossed the road to come along and help Johnny. And of course, the reason why Johnny and Neil have come down today is to come along to talk at the Bournemouth Samaritans AGM, and the aim for the Samaritans is to reduce the number of people who are dying by suicide. These are all important things. But one of the things I would say about the Samaritans, I think, makes them head and shoulders above other organisations, and that's the listening. And I think if we can take the time to actually listen, if you go over and talk to someone and say, ask them if they're okay, let them talk and shut up, because it's about them right now. And they really do need to talk. If they start saying, I feel so depressed, I want to kill myself, oh, I felt like that too. That's not what it's about. Listen, give them that time. And one of the things I would say to students who are just joining the university now is that we've recognised over the last few years that we need to be doing more to help students integrate, to be able to talk about mental health, but also to give them that support. And you and I met, well, we'd met previously, but one of the other times we met was when we were undergoing mental health first aid training. There's a number of us across the university now who have been trained to be able to use a toolkit to, not just in college, but also with students, to be able to work with students, to be able to de-escalate, recognise certain problems, and be able to help a little bit. And that's what we do.
So we're making steps here, definitely. And I think, you know, to look on the positive side, which I think this is an incredibly positive experience. And when I heard that you were both coming to the university, I knew how exciting it would be for the students to hear from you, even should it be in the ether. Anything that you can think of in terms of advice you could give the younger yourselves to manage what you both went through? Because I would not in any way negate the experience that Neil went through, to have to empathise, to watch somebody in great distress. And every day now I see students, the anxiety of an exam, the feeling of inadequacy. Anything that you can give as advice in looking after yourself to new people to university?
I think finding your people, for me, is that's the thing that's really important. You know, when I first joined university, I was with people that, I don't know, I mean, we were just all put together, and I kind of just accepted, well, that's the people that I have to be with, and I have to get drunk every night, and that wasn't for me. But I thought that's the way it has to be. But then I found people that actually I was more comfortable with. You know, there is so many kind of social interactions at university, and I don't cope very well in too many big social situations, and that's fine. You know, I forced myself to go to parties, which I hated. I got very anxious. I drank too much. Looking back, I wish I would have said no to certain things, to going to those parties, to having to go to those social situations, and actually spending time doing the things that I wanted to, that were healthy for me, that were nourishing for me. So I wish, looking back, that I would have listened really to what I wanted, instead of thinking, what does everyone else want me to do, or what should I be doing? Actually, it's what you want to do, what's right for you. And that's something that, I do now, but I didn't at university. So, and that takes some practice, and I think it takes time. It's really good for you to actually check in with yourself and see, you know, do I want to go out tonight? Do I have to go out to this party tonight? Because you know, you don't have to do anything that you don't want to do,
and people aren't going to dislike you if you don't go.
No, actually, people respect that. People respect that. You know, people respect. Okay, you don't want to come out. That's fine. You know, it's fine. If you're not up for it tonight, that's okay. And but yeah, being open, being honest. I didn't do that when I was at university, but if I did it all again, I would. I'd be more open and honest for sure. Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. Come and do a degree here. You're more than welcome. We'll construct a degree course especially great. For you. Nice. Maybe you could be a tutor, actually.
That'd be great. I love it.
That'll be fun. Neil, any advice you can think of, being that young man, that 24-year-old?
Yeah, hindsight is a great thing, isn't it?
You know,
we talk about hindsight all day. Just listening to what Johnny said, actually, I think something just came into my head, which was the experience that I've had in you know, my adult life now. If I would give myself some advice being younger, is that people are usually so wrapped up in their own focus on how they appear and their own issues in their life that are going on, that actually they don't really care to kind of pigeonhole you as much as you think they do. Basically, in a nutshell, yeah, people are too wrapped up in their own lives to really, you know, to really let it affect, you know, how they think about you. And you're probably building up in your own head if you feel like, you know, you're trying to win people's approval or you're trying to fit in. People are probably thinking about themselves more than they are about you. So if you take that as a viewpoint to give it a bit of reference, you know, that allows you to maybe just chill out a bit more. And like Johnny said, just be yourself, because people will respect that a lot more. And they've probably got the same issues that you're feeling. They're feeling them too. So that would be my advice to my younger self is, just don't worry what people think so much.
Totally, totally. And Andrew, I think advice from your point of view would be interesting.
Yeah, I applaud all those things being said. But one thing I would urge with any of you who are joining here is it's so important to talk and seek that help, because that is the first step towards the journey of recovery. It could be a roller coaster. Johnny's already said that there's been times when he's been unwell again. Let's not pretend that these things will just go away. But the more we talk, the more we can get you on that road to recovery and give you those toolkits that you need to navigate life.
And if I'm allowed a point of view, can I ask for one? Is that okay?
Yeah.
I have a friend who's actually sitting next door, Colin. Hello, Colin. Oh, it's yes. A bit of a surprise. Sorry. This is Dr. Colin Black, who is a sound artist, a radio artist, and composer. And could you just tell the gentleman here just about the sound bridge in Limerick that you experienced?
Well, it's not a sound bridge, but they do this yearly festival where it's called From Darkness to Light. They get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, they all gather, and they walk through the city, and they cross the bridges where people jump, and they put candles on there, and they remember, and they, you know, make it part of their community to make it okay to talk about, and make this something that is, you know, acceptable to go, this is what happened, how can we, like, help people to feel okay to talk about it and you know, like, make it okay, as okay as it can be.
Yeah, you know, to make something like that really visible and to make people think about those points of reference is really
important. And I think it's rather appropriate you mention that, Colin, because it was only just over a week ago that both Johnny and Neil were walking out of darkness with the Clasp Charity, which is another great organisation looking to reduce death by suicide.
Mm-hmm. And also you ran the marathon this year, gentlemen, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We did. Again, we did to raise awareness around mental health. We ran it for Heads Together, which is a coalition of different mental health charities that the Young Royals set up. And it was called the first ever mental health marathon the world has ever seen, which was great. You know, that really felt like a tipping point. Obviously, we've got a long way to go, but it feels like things are really, really changing, which is really exciting.
I think there's been incredible change, and actually there's been a clear change in perspective, just the way people are thinking about mental health, and you are clearly a very important part of that. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Johnny Benjamin, Neil Lesham, and Dr. Andrew Mayer, and Colin. Mm-hmm. Colin Black as well. Sorry to pull you in the last bit there. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.